Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Cliff, do you get asked whether you're cool with it or not before the decision's made?
Yeah, somewhat. Yeah, but for the brand exposure, all those things, it's a tremendous opportunity for the Cardinals. We all understand that.
It sounds like if it was your call, that you might not want to do it.
No, I'm good. I'm good. Like I said, I think it has an opportunity. We obviously struggled back after last season. It has an opportunity to come in, and guys will perk up when the camera's around. You don't want to look bad on camera. It's just kind of human nature.
Easy for him to say. He always looks good on camera. For the rest of us, it takes a little bit of work.
The NFC
especially
West,
when,
young, good-looking coach crowd over there.
When you cut yourself shaving, it makes it even more difficult. I had an excuse for being here just in the nick of time, pun intended, although it wasn't premeditated. I cut myself shaving and it wouldn't stop bleeding. Isn't it so weird? It just happens so fast. You're putting these sharp blades, pressing them deeply into the flesh of your face, and 99.9% of the time it doesn't cut you. But the one time when it does, for whatever reason, however it happens, for me, it will not stop bleeding. I cannot get it to stop bleeding. In fact, I'm not 100% sure it's actually stopped bleeding. I haven't checked yet. I definitely don't think it's dripping all over the table.
I don't even know where it is, so I don't see anything.
Okay, good.
So you're good. Yeah, I think it's
good.
But it is. It is a modern medical miracle. I get it. Five razor blades against our skin, just silky smooth. It is amazing. I get it. And yes, it is annoying to get cut, and then it doesn't stop bleeding, and it takes forever. What'd you do?
I pressed toilet paper on it. The old school way where you rip off the little corner of toilet paper and press it against the spot and leave it there until it hardens. That's the early 70s. Back in my day, when we cut ourselves shaving, we ripped off tiny little pieces of toilet paper and stuck them to the spots on our face where they were bleeding.
Yes,
and
I've
then
seen that.
When you pull them off, it opens the scab all over again. So it was a stupid-ass way of dealing with, unless you were planning to leave the little pieces of toilet paper there until the wound healed completely, it was not a very wise process for stopping the bleeding on your face. I remember there was a thing called a styptic pencil. I think we've had this conversation before. It was this white, jagged thing that burned like crazy, and I don't know if we had that conversation.
I have no idea what you're talking
you
about.
Mentioned,
that one.
You mentioned a styptic pencil. Styptic pencil. You can styptic that pencil right up your ass with that music. Hey, Pete, or whoever. I feel like there's been an SNL commercial where they've done like 10 blades or 15 blades. Like, when do they stop with the blades? It used to be,
maximum
please
strength.
Don't play the music again. It used to be one. And then it was a big deal when it went to two.
Yes, right.
Then you get three. Then you get four. And, yeah, I've got that one down there that is like it would scare the hell out of somebody in the 50s or 60s if they saw that thing. It's like an implement of torture. What do you do with this thing with all these blades? But, yeah, for whatever reason, they don't cut you except when they do, and then you don't stop bleeding. Good morning.
Good morning.
Did you cut yourself shaving? I'm looking in my magic mirror, Timmy.
Nope.
Hello, Timmy. There's the styptic pencil. Look at that.
Wow, look at that.
Look at that. How quickly they found it. Does it say what it says?
Stops bleeding fast. There you go.
Stops bleeding fast.
The man is distinguished. Yes, he's even old on the packaging. Pete's right. The guy in the
hey, it's
just old.
But no, the message is very clear. If you want to be truly classy, you need a long coat, you need a cane, you need a top hat, and you need in your pocket of one of your various, you know, items there, the pants or the jacket, or maybe even it fits into the hat, you keep your styptic pencil. Maybe that's where that dude, Duke Earl, carries his styptic pencil. Under his top hat.
Maybe he does. You know, this is interesting. It's coming up. I've had this conversation on the podcast a little lately. Like, the cane. I'm kind of a fan of the cane. Like, I think I could be one of those older guys that gets around, like, 60, 58 years old and has, like, a cool fashionable cane and, like, some sort of hat, like a Kangol hat or something else on. I think I could do that. I think I could pull it off. I mean, what's your thought on the cane accessory? You know, it helps you with the walking, but more just for the cool look and, like, you know, try to be distinguished and all that.
I think for a guy your size, it's not a cane. It's actually a stilt.
Crutches.
That you would be using. but I would definitely want – now you got to balance. You got to balance. And I'm closer to this than you are, but you're getting there too, bucko. You want to balance functionality with style. Like, I don't want one of those canes that sprouts into four legs with tennis balls at the bottom.
No, I'm not going that way. That's not a cane. That's like you're on the way out and you barely can move. Yeah. That's what that is.
I would be okay with a very attractive wooden implement.
That's what I'm talking
about.
That I also
could use. I look forward to the day when I can shout to somebody, eat hickory, and whack them upside the head. That would be a benefit. What are they going to do to me? I'm old. What, are they going to put me in jail because I whacked somebody up the head?
Yeah.
You presume that whoever got whacked upside the head deserved it.
Maybe. I don't know. Old people are getting beat up again here in this country. So up here in New York and things, there's definitely been some old people that get beat up. So you better watch it.
I don't think the youngsters
respect their elders as much anymore.
I don't think they ever did. But anyway, I'll get one of those canes that, like, has a button and a knife comes out the end if I really want to protect myself.
Wow.
Then I'll be good to go.
There we go.
And I can shave with it. I can shave with it, and then I'll cut myself.
Sure.
And then I'll use my styptic pencil.
It needs three
that I
razors
carry under
on.
My top hat. All right. Let's get to Cliff Kingsbury. He didn't do any of the tells by touching his own face, but when he answered the question about how he feels about Hard Knocks or whatever, I could just tell by the way he said it. He doesn't want to do it. Nobody wants to do it. And they sell you on it. I could tell that he had been sold on it because this is the old NFL films. This is the Steve Sable argument. Back in his day, Vince Lombardi would tell the NFL films crews to stand by the sideline with their cameras, even if they didn't have film in them, and act like they were filming because the guys perked up and they tried harder when they thought they were being filmed.
Right.
Now, that was in the 60s where nobody had cameras. Today, everybody's watching. Today, there's a camera everywhere. So I don't know that this idea, well, NFL Films is going to be there, so they're going to be on camera, so they're going to try harder. Everything's recorded. They record every practice. Cameras are everywhere. And when you're in the middle of the season, if you're stopping to worry about the cameras, you've already lost. And I think Kingsbury's biggest concern is, here we go, in-season Hard Knocks. Second straight year, they're going to have a team that fades down the stretch. Because every one of my teams since 2013 at Texas Tech and all the way through the time with the Red Raiders and every year with the Cardinals, my teams start off strong to quite strong, and then they fall apart. And I really would not rather have that documented. Can we do the first half of the season? Can we do that? I'm on board with that. Second half of the season, I'm still trying to figure out what the hell is wrong with my team. I really don't need the extra pressure of being scrutinized by all these cameras as we fall apart again. That would be my honest candid, blunt assessment if I was Cliff Kingsbury. And I think it doesn't take a genius to realize, there it is. There's that graphic. Can't finish. Sorry, Cliff can't finish Kingsbury. Kingsbury. That's a good nickname, Chris Berman. Cliff can't finish Kingsbury. Look at it. Look at
yeah,
the.
Yeah, it is. It's quite
it's
shocking.
Embarrassing.
I know. I've seen it. I know. It is. It's crazy, actually. It is in a lot of ways. And, I mean, you make all the right points, I think. First off, I mean, NFL teams, yes, to deal with the camera crew and, you know, as much as they try to, you know, hide in the corner and not be in your way, they are in the way. And you are on camera. So then you are self-conscious about what you're doing. For the players, it might not be that bad. There is, I think, some positive because you know, you're right. You are used to being filmed. But if it's in your meeting room, you're certainly not going to want to be, like, in that lazy position where maybe your eyes doze. You're going to not want to look like an idiot and get an answer wrong in front of the camera crew. I think there is value there. But for the head coach, I don't see a whole lot of positives. I don't. I think there's one more chance for really, you know, kind of what you're talking about, for people to dissect and pile on a little bit if things don't go the right way. And I think that's what Cliff Kingsbury is definitely going to have to be a little bit worried about, because that will be the theme of the Arizona Cardinals, or what everybody's looking for, what you're talking about. Oh, it's week eight. I mean, can't you hear the narrator? You know, and Cliff Kingsbury, he's had these great starts, and that becomes a thing. So now he's answering questions about it. And, of course, now if they do lose a game, you start to feel like, whoa, everybody's going to see this. Everybody's going to evaluate what we're doing in here. So I think it does add a little more pressure to the building, maybe than not. That's for sure.
I've been a longtime fan of John Facenda. That was not a good one.
I know that was
John Phil Simsda. That's what that was.
Who is the guy? Who's the guy that does the HBO? He's got a great voice on HBO.
Is it Liev Schreiber? Is it still him? Is he?
I don't think so.
Look it up, Pete.
Yeah.
Pete, let us know who narrated in-season Hard Knocks last year, and was it the same as the person who did the preseason Hard Knocks? I just can't remember.
I know.
If I have to choose between preseason or in-season, I'll take in-season because I think it's more revealing. We've seen the training camp Hard Knocks over and over again. It is Liev Schreiber.
Wow,
so
there you go.
So, but it's Liev, not Lee. Is it Liev or Liev? L-I-E-V. So yes. I don't know.
That's
I'm
confusing.
Sorry. Hey, you know.
Deep thoughts by Mike Floria over here.
Listen, they're going to ask the young kids.
But during the season.
Here's my
preseason. Like, what you're talking about.
Preseason.
If you were a player or a coach, or are you talking about, what are you saying there?
No. I'm saying as a consumer.
Okay.
The content.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I think that in season, you know, The cameras are stationary. It's not like that. Like they're like up on the wall. It's not like somebody's in there up in your face with a camera. So I just think that when you're in the fight week in and week out, it becomes much easier to forget about it. You just have to forget about it because you're focused on the task at hand.
Right.
It's easier to be a distraction in training camp because you're not as locked in as you are in the season. And the Colts were locked in at 3-5 when they started with the in-season Hard Knocks last year. They won 6 of the next 7.
Yeah.
But they still fell apart.
They fell apart at the end.
They still lost to the Jaguars.
And the Raiders.
The woeful, hapless Jaguars in Week 18, when all they had to do was beat a team that was playing for nothing with an interim coach, which was an upgrade over the regular coach. But nevertheless, all they had to do was beat the Jaguars in Jacksonville on a day when they were showing up with clown noses on because they were trying to pressure the owner of the team, Shad Khan, to not make Trent Baalke the GM. That was all happening at that time. And the Jaguars somehow won that game. So that triggered Carson Wentz getting thrown overboard. And I'm sure Jim Irsay thought about firing everybody at least for a little while after that debacle. And they're still pissed off about it now. So, hey, look, Kingsbury's got his contract extension. So it's not like he's in lame duck territory. But we saw the graphic. We know the history. His teams fade down the stretch. So this is the year where they're going to figure it all out. Think about that. This is the year. I got to get it all figured out this year. All this pressure's on me. It's mounting. This is year 10 of me as a head coach, and I've got to figure it out this year. I've got to do it. What? You're going to have the freaking cameras? What? Really? I really got to work. I've really got to be focused. I don't want anything else on top of this pile of stress. And you're going to have Hard Knocks.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want it if I was Cliff Kingsbury.
No, I'm definitely not. You know, and it's a huge year, you know, as we know, for their football team. I mean, I think there's going to be a microscope on them for sure. And, I mean, to what you're talking about with the Colts, I mean, who's to say it didn't wear them out a little bit? It would wear me out. I could say that much as a player. I really would. I mean, I do think it's one of those things where coaches want to make excuses. They're not going to say anything. But if they're with their close friends, they're going to go, man, we had to deal with that, you know, inside the, you know, Hard Knock stuff being around the building. That kind of added to the circus last year. They're never going to publicly say it or say it to their owner or anybody like that. And then, I mean, damn, it'd wear me out. Like, what? You want to come home with me, camera crew? No, screw off. Like, it's my time now. That would wear me out. I wouldn't want to deal with that. And then let alone it be a year and like you're talking about, a year where the theme is going to be, you know, second half collapse. That's going to be the story of the Cardinals. That's going to be the story of Hard Knocks, is can they overcome that? Probably part of the reason they got picked there. You know, so, yes, that's going to add pressure and take a toll on the team to a degree. And I don't care who you are. It's hard to deal with that around the building all the time. I wouldn't want to deal with it. It does weigh on you. You could say whatever you want and try to ignore it. You know, you are. And then, of course, you're always going to have a lot of time to, sit down, do whatever. And as we saw last year, too, Mike, we did get a little look in to go, you know, do they like Carson Wentz? I know I was watching towards the end of the year going, I'm not sure if they have confidence in him. And the way Wentz talks to them on the sideline and, like, tries to get them to be confident, you know, you started to glean certain things about the relationship to look farther into it. And that's what I would be worried about if I'm Kingsbury and company, like you're talking about.
I'd be worried about so many different things. And I want to know more about this whole in-season Hard Knocks, because it just kind of fell out of the sky.
Yeah, right.
Last year. I remember that they teased there was some big announcement about Hard Knocks, and I thought, oh, maybe it's finally going away, because it should. And no, we're not getting less of it. We're getting more of it. How do they pick the team? Is there a formula? For the training camp Hard Knocks, there's a formula. Any team that has a new head coach, has done it in the past decade, or had been to the playoffs the most recent year, I think it's the most recent year, not the last 2 years, the most recent year, they're eligible to be tapped on the shoulder to do Hard Knocks. I don't know how they figure out the in-season Hard Knocks, and I don't know what the benefit for the Cardinals is. What is the actual benefit? What is the perceived or real benefit? Is it going to create more Cardinals fans? I don't think so.
No, yeah. I'm with you. I don't know if there is a benefit. No, the only benefit is it to the NFL, selling it, entertainment, one more piece of content that we can all look at. You know, I did find the Colts in-season thing interesting, but I think this in-season thing started to really pop on, right? What was that, a few years ago with Amazon, right? When they started to do a little bit during
All or Nothing.
Right, All or Nothing.
Which was excellent.
Right, and I feel like this is kind of like, they did that, and then HBO and Hard Knocks was like, well, let's do our in-season. And it kind of went from there, and I don't know either, but I certainly would not want it, and especially in a year like the Arizona Cardinals got. A lot of pressure. DeAndre Hopkins dealing with PED suspension. You're going to have your guys talk about that, answer that. That's going to be a story.
But when is this going to start?
Yeah,
he's back
right.
from his suspension.
You're right.
It starts in November.
You're right. I think you're right. You're right. It's all right. So you still have to answer questions.
I always wonder about the deeper broadcast business relations that go on here, because for Amazon, for All or Nothing,
right,
it was a way to build a bridge to the NFL.
Sure.
They stopped doing it during the pandemic, and they don't do it anymore. And, you know, relationship with Amazon cemented via Thursday Night Football. HBO has been the longstanding home of Hard Knocks. Why expand the relationship with the NFL? What other play is potentially there between HBO and the NFL? I always wonder about those kinds of things when I see that relationship expanding. Because, right. Look, HBO has so much content, and there's so much NFL content out there. If I'm HBO, you really got to sell me on why I want this. Like, I got a lot of other stuff. And there's a lot of NFL stuff out there. It'd be different if there wasn't NFL Network and there wasn't all these videos breaking down and access to teams and press conferences and this, that, and the other thing. There's really nothing exclusive about this, and it does quickly and easily fall into the cracks. I mean, it gives fans something on Tuesday and Wednesday night during the latter weeks of football season.
That's where I was going to kind of go. You're flipping the channel. That's where it caught me last year with the Colts, at least, to where, yeah, it's Tuesday, Wednesday night. I'm flipping the channels. I'm still on DirecTV, right? So I'm doing that. You pull up the guide. You see Hard Knocks. Let me see where they're at. What are they doing here? Oh, okay, this is kind of interesting. And, you know, there is some value to that. I do. You know, it is got a little bit of a different look and feel than the NFL channel type of stuff that we see on there. Hard Knocks, there is a little nostalgia, and they've done it for such a long time that, you know, there's a way they do it to where you go, oh, okay, it's Hard Knocks. Here we go. So I did see some value in it, but I hear your point. I definitely do.
Hey, Control Room, when he says he's still on DirecTV, why don't you play the piano for him? Because I am exclusive streaming, baby. I am with the times. I got YouTube TV. I got two YouTube TV accounts.
How did that work when there was multiple NFL games on this year?
You know how it worked? You know how it worked?
What?
I got a screen. It's about 85 inches right across from there that has all of the games coming from NBC.
Right.
That's how it worked this season.
Yeah, well, not only had the double Monday nighter make up a game, you had a problem. You had a problem then. That's when you had a problem. Yeah.
No, I think we still had access to the feed here on the screen that NBC installed. I don't want to get into the whole DirecTV, how expensive it is or was for me, but YouTube TV, much more economical, and it has all the stuff that I watch. So,
yeah.
Regardless.
I get you.
DirecTV old, YouTube TV, I'm with it, baby. You can't play the music, you can't play the piano for me when it comes to that.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Cliff Kingsbury, one of the old themes. And look, I know how this goes. There's always people who get pissed off every year about it. They're going to be pissed off about something. So you get to a point where you just don't give a shit, frankly. Yeah. Voluntary workouts, OTA, phase three. This is where it's practice. We're talking about practice.
We are. It's practice.
And it's practice where offense and defense get implemented.
Yep.
They get installed.
Definitely.
They do a lot of the work now so they can hit the ground running in training camp. A lot of value in the offseason program.
There is.
So, it's voluntary. It's voluntary. Fine. I understand it's voluntary. You don't have to show up. And I support players when they choose, for whatever reason, to not show up because it is voluntary. And if you want me to be there, make it worth my while. Give me a big workout bonus. Let's go to the bargaining table. Let's make these practices mandatory and let's get something in exchange for it. But don't expect me to show up and do stuff that I'm not paid to do. Last year, there was a lot of guys led by Tom Brady, one of the biggest voices telling players, don't show up. So when they don't show up, it's still newsworthy. We're not trying to shame them into showing up. But when, for example, Kyler Murray isn't there for the Cardinals, and he's got a contract issue that is still unresolved. You don't just ignore it. You say, hey, it's voluntary, but it's also significant when the quarterback of the team isn't there.
That's right. Yeah, it is significant.
We're not saying he's doing anything wrong.
No.
We're just saying what he's doing.
No, that's right. You know, you talked about, like, you know, they're not paid to be there, right? I mean, okay, yeah, I hear you. But they are being paid to do everything they can to be in the best possible shape and ready to go for the season. And to me, that this is a part of it. Now, I know I don't look at it and go, oh, man, he missed a day or two, and oh, no, that's trouble or whatever. But there is importance to what you're talking about. You know, the mental aspect of the game, getting the body moving, doing all of that, sure. There's definitely value in that. I understand guys missing. Sometimes, hey, there's family things. Sometimes, you know, maybe, ooh, I might want a new contract, and I'm kind of talking about that, but I'm not 100% healthy yet, so let me – or not quite totally in shape yet. So let me buy myself another week or two before I show up so they don't see me that way. There's a lot of things there. But to your point, there's not a lot of practice time in the NFL anymore. And this is valuable time. You can say what you want. Yeah, Tom Brady can get away with it. Well, okay, yes, you're 22. And we know he's going to practice and do the things the right way behind the scenes. You know, for the rest of these guys, I don't know if they're quite as professional as Brady yet, and I think there's still a lot of growth with some of these young guys that I question, why are you missing OTAs? I want to go, Tom Brady was not missing OTAs in year three. He definitely wasn't doing that. He was there, like, front and center, hand, feet on the ground, yes, coach, no, coach, oh, let me write a note, you said this. So that's where I do think there's value, especially in your early years as a player in the NFL.
But the bottom line is they are voluntary.
They are.
And that's the balance that the players have to strike. And again, if you want to make it worth their while, offer them money to be there or make it mandatory. And for the folks who would agree with a lot of what you said, that they should be there because they're laying the foundation to get paid later, they should be there. I mean, that's all well and good. I think there may be some folks out there. But here's my point.
Yeah.
Because we just finished the draft a few weeks ago, and here's the folks who I think may need to check themselves. The ones who would be very staunch, it's voluntary, quit talking about it. Why are you talking about it? It's voluntary. I bet a lot of those same folks are the ones who have no problem with the incoming draft picks being forced to do all this stuff under the guise of a job interview. It's just a job interview. It's a 3-month job interview where you got to do all this crap and you don't get paid for any of it. It's an honor and a privilege, right? So there's a subset. There's an intersection of the fans out there who will say it's voluntary. Lay off them. They're starving. They don't have to be there. Oh, but it's, for the 3 months that these incoming players are expected to do all sorts of crap, it's no big deal. So the bottom line is, I think anytime you're exerting effort above and beyond what you're required to do, there should be some, you're doing it for the benefit of somebody. There should be some benefit to you beyond it's good for you.
Well, there should be something beyond it's good for you.
Well,
I get it, but there is benefit. First off, they are paying you to be a part of the organization, and practice is part of football. I mean, I don't like what the offseason's not free.
But it's not required.
I understand it's not required. You get it per diem. I get it. Well, that's because, yes, now we've got into players' rights and there's only so many hours and all that. But damn, I mean, it's still part of the game is being, practicing and being ready to go. I mean, for Kyler Murray specifically, yes, there's no direct check that's going into his bank account right now. But he wants to make $45 million a year and be that kind of quarterback and be that guy. Well, being there with your guys, maybe learning the new things in the offense, getting your, feet on the ground compared to like what you're talking about, now as compared to training camp, that might give you the head start you need to come out of the gates, play the way you want. I don't know. I just think there's still great value in all of it. And I don't think it could be replicated easy outside the building. It's a special team or group of circumstances that can really replicate that.
2 points before we get to some of the specific guys who aren't there this year. Yeah. Number one, and I'm going to forget them because as I've been sitting here, it's like, what are those 2 points again?
Right.
Here
you
they
need
are.
A pen
number
and
one.
Write them down. Yep, go ahead.
Number one. We say this every year, but keep this in mind. Guys are going to work out anyway. You're much better off working out
in
the building.
Mike. Right.
Because you have insurance if you're in the building.
Right.
You drop a weight on your foot. You have some other freak injury. You get paid for the full year.
Tariq Cohn, if you were on another team. Right.
If you get injured away from work and you're Juwan James. Arbitration still pending between James and the Broncos over working out on his own. The question is, did the Broncos supervise his activities enough that they owe him as if it happened in the building? Well, if you're in the building, you never have to get to that.
Yeah,
if you're
that's
in
right.
the building, you get your money. The other point is this. Before 2011, the offseason program was a lot more lengthy,
definitely
detailed,
yes,
intense.
Right.
70 to 80% of the offensive and defensive playbooks were installed during the offseason program.
Definitely.
Which really allowed a lot of fine-tuning and preparation for the start of the season. What do we see now the first few weeks of the season? When do you want to catch the Patriots? You want to catch them early because Bill Belichick hasn't had a chance to really work his magic yet. Offensive line play not where it needs to be. Defense not where it needs to be. They get better as the season goes on because they don't have the same reps before week one that they used to have. And the reason that happened, plain and simple, NFL had the financial package that it was going to cram down the union's throats because the union got a great deal in 2006. The NFL was determined to turn the tables financially in 2011. So when the time came for the union to cry uncle and the union started asking for stuff that didn't cost anything, like reduced padded practices in season, reduced two-a-days in training camp, reduced off-season program, the owners just looked around and was like, does that cost us anything? No, we actually saved some money. Okay, fine. What's this cost us? You want that? It costs us nothing? Fine. You want that? It'll get you to agree, and it doesn't cost us anything? Fine. And they agreed to all this stuff that makes it harder for the coaches to get their teams ready.
Yeah, harder to get the coaches ready. And listen, I think it's still not good for the players. I don't. First off, the off-season program's not that grueling. It's not. You know, again, it's football. You're going to have to work out. We know that. But, you know, it's football. All right? And you're in the building at, you know, 7:30 in the morning. Most days you're out of there by 12:30, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And you do it all again. And you're only going 4 days a week. You're not even going 5 days a week in the NFL at this point. It's usually Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday off, Thursday, Friday. Or teams go Monday through Thursday. And then you get the three-day weekend a la Chris Sims style NBC Sports. So that's where, you know, it's not – it was never – you know, again, yes, it's football. It's Gruden's coaching me and stuff. But I never was like, oh, man, I'm so exhausted. And the other thing I would say, mentally ready to your point when training camp came, I just went, I feel really good. I mean, I know he's going to add some stuff, but, man, I remember those coaching points and the things he said. And, you know, physically, you know, I got to think there's some correlation to injuries and things. Again, you're getting on the field. You're doing what you do. You're getting used to the movements of – oh, I'm playing a DB, and I'm getting the body used to those movements that are then so abruptly going to be thrown upon you, you know, late in July, as compared to the guy who's, you know, oh, I've worked out a little on my own, and I've done some drills with my buddy who plays high school football down the street. Oh, wait, now it's time for the NFL, and I got to cover Terry McLaurin, and oh my gosh, I got to turn on another gear. Oh, I pulled my hamstring. Oh, really? No, shocker. And to me, that's where I think there's value as far as the physical aspect as well to get the body ready for the NFL season.
So if I understand you correctly, it would be voluntary if you were to show up on Friday, but it also would be good for you. So maybe you should show up on
that's
Friday.
This is for football players. It's not for not for talking on NBC. But I do think that, now, you know, and I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Make your point.
I was just going to say there. You know, there is a lot of research, and I think we hit on this last year, where teams are starting to realize, and there's people in the NFL that know this already, that the teams that start to go, we're going to be on the field only for an hour, and we're not going to practice that much, and we're going to do it 4 days a week, getting ready for the Sunday game. Those teams they're starting to see are the teams that are getting hurt more on Sundays because they're not doing enough of getting the body ready for, wait, we're going to be sitting there playing football for 3.5 hours on a Sunday. They're finding the teams that actually do stay on the field. It doesn't need to be grueling the whole time, but are out there for 2+ hours, 2.5 hours that emulates the game a little bit more. Those teams are the ones that are staying healthier as compared to the teams that are going, we're getting off our feet and we're only on the field for 40, you know, an hour and we're out of here. And I think that's just an interesting aspect. Sorry, I just had to bring that up.
Coaches have to be very careful about what they can and can't say because baked into the CBA is the idea that coaches can say nothing to suggest that the voluntary workouts are anything but voluntary. And every once in a while, you have a guy who touches that third rail, and it used to be far more prevalent and blatant than it now is. Here's Cliff Kingsbury walking through the minefield of commenting on players not present for voluntary OTAs, led by, in Arizona, quarterback Kyler Murray.
Yeah, we've talked to everybody. Everybody we knew going in to the offseason, the start of the offseason program, who's going to be here, what their schedule is like, and when we expect them back.
Would you like to see Kyler and Mark Hollywood together out there?
Like, I've seen them together, live and in person on the other team, and it was not fun for me. So I know what it looks like. But, no, I think, like I've said before, I think as a coach, you want to have these guys here all the time, but it's just not how the rules are set up, and different guys handle it different ways.
Do you anticipate Kyler being here for mandatory?
I do.
You get the feeling Cliff Kingsbury at Texas Tech saw Kyler Murray and Hollywood Brown in that second column of
the lost column
graphic.
End of the year.
Look, he handled it the right way. You have the conversations with the guys, and every once in a while you hear that there's a player who has an excused absence from the voluntary program. Well, they're all excused. There's no excuse necessary, but you'll hear that term, and you know, you get the impression that they're in the loop and we know what we're doing and we know who's not here, but in theory, you don't have to know anything. You just don't show up. We open the door and we see who comes. You know, it's like a shopper at a store. Who shows up? We'll see. It's voluntary to show up at the grocery store. It's voluntary to show up to work out. But they do try to talk to these guys, and they try to maintain the relationship. Because,
definitely,
look, they are going to be there in 2 months. What does the offseason program mean? Well, look at the churn that constantly happens on these rosters. Guys are getting cut. Guys are getting cut based on what? They're getting based on – it's happening based on what they see at these voluntary offseason workouts.
Oh, we don't need that guy. This guy's better than we thought. Let's get rid of him. Right, yes, 100%.
So, it's even though it's voluntary, it's still very important. And I feel bad for the kid who shows up and says, oh, I got to be there. I got to go. I got to try hard. And then they saw me and they don't think I'm very good, and now I don't have to be there anymore because they told me to leave. But that just shows you it still is important to the process. That's where we try to walk through the minefield.
Yes,
voluntary,
right.
But it's still important to the process of getting ready.
Yeah, that's the point. I mean, it's part of the team building process for the 2022 season. It starts now. The lifeline of the 2022 NFL football team is being built, you know, as we speak. So, you know, that's where, you know, you'd like everybody there. And, you know, you start your new mantra for the year. You get everybody on the same page, camaraderie. Oh, hey, here's a new wrinkle or two on defense and offense, and let's work on that a little bit and kind of go through the procedure of how we want to do that. There's all of that. But, you know, yeah, you could tell Cliff Kingsbury definitely walking on eggshells a little bit there. Yeah, I'm sure he's talked to Kyler Murray. But what's he supposed to do? It's a business. This is part of the business, and if Kyler Murray had a contract, he would be there. I would guarantee that if Kyler Murray had a contract, he would be there. But he doesn't, so this is his way of kind of, you know, giving them the two middle fingers and saying, no, I'll practice on my own for now. I'm not going to give you my services until you pay me appropriately.
Well, and that's the key, too. This is the application of business leverage to try to get his contract, along with protecting himself against an injury that would happen during OTAs, and even though he would be covered this year with his regular season salary and also his fifth-year option payment, which is fully guaranteed, you potentially undermine your long-term, I don't want to call it a windfall because it's earned, your long-term major generational life-changing money is at risk if you get yourself injured during one of these off-season workouts. But again, if you're going to work out on your own, you're better off working out in the building, but it's part of the balance. I want my contract. I'll show up when I get my contract. Until then, I'm not showing up. And that's part of they're all the reasons for not being there are legitimate, but it's very legitimate to say, I want my contract and I'm not showing up and putting myself at risk until I get it. Debo Samuel, that's gotta be the prime reason why he's not in San Francisco. Now, we've kind of accepted post-draft that it's just a financial thing and it'll get worked out.
Yeah, right.
Debo Samuel has still said nothing to confirm that, yeah, it's fine. We'll just work it out. They'll give me a contract at some point. And all that stuff I said about not wanting to be here, asking to be traded, doing this when they were walking through the club with the sign that said Debo Samuel will stay with the 49ers, that didn't mean anything. He's yet to walk that back. So we just assume they're going to get it worked out, but I don't know. Bottom line is, he's not there. He's in the final year of his rookie deal. He wants a new contract. That's one reason to not be there. Not wanting to be there anymore is another reason to not be there. We still don't know what is motivating him right now, Chris.
No, we don't. I mean, we right? He started to follow the 49ers on social media again, right? At least. Or,
that's right. That's right.
Right? That, so we have
following.
That. Yeah, we got that. But, like, I mean, again, this is one where I'm not going to be mad at the player here. I mean, it says when you read it out loud, okay, and you go, "Well, Deebo Samuel, he's holding out. You know, he wants a new contract because he's on his fourth year of a $7.7 million contract." Well, of course he's holding out because no way should he be playing for that. So. That's, you know, again, as much as I'd like him to see him there and my friend Kyle Shanahan's the coach and I want them to do well, you know, this is a guy that's he's blown away his contract. He burned it, put fire on it and put water on it and burned it again. I mean, he's killing it. He can't come back until he gets paid properly. He's arguably the best receiver in football. He's the number one weapon on the 49ers football team, which is a great football team and a Super Bowl caliber team. And he plays the position as physical as any receiver we've seen in recent history here. So he can't come back until he gets paid. And I understand that, and I think you and I will both be in his corner until that happens.
I remember... Oh, my God, it was almost to the same day, May 22, 2013. Michael Crabtree playing with the 49ers, tears an Achilles tendon at an OTA workout. I mean, look, if you're Deebo Samuel and you don't have any protection beyond this year, at least Kyler Murray his fifth-year option fully guaranteed, up near $30 million, $25 million, whatever it is. But for Deebo, all he's got is this year. So if he would have some sort of a serious injury during OTAs that wipes him out for this year, that contract goes away. It's even more imperative for him to basically keep himself in bubble wrap until he gets his contract.
Pretty
I
much.
Know he's going to want to work out,
yeah.
But I wouldn't do anything until I get that deal, if even at this point a contract would turn it around. But you did remember, I had forgotten, he was following the 49ers again on social media. So that is something. If not following them means something, following them again necessarily means something. So maybe it is just a matter of time before they give
I feel him like it. I
contract.
Mean, it feels weird because it feels like where else does
25?
It go?
I know. Hey, you know? But they don't have a lot of cap space. I know where they can get $25 million. Lickety split.
Yeah. Isn't that cushion crack there called Jimmy Garoppolo?
Yeah. Terry McLaurin, you mentioned him earlier, covering him at OTAs. Well, if you're a defensive back with the Washington Commanders, you don't have to worry about covering Terry McLaurin because he's not there. Here are Martin Mayhew and Ron Rivera, coach and GM, not respectively. Rivera's the GM. No, Rivera's the coach. Mayhew's the GM. Never mind. They know who we mean. Here they are from before the draft talking about Terry McLaurin.
We have had dialogue with Terry and his agent, have great respect for both of those men. And, you know, we're really excited about the opportunity to have Terry continue with us for a long time. So we're working on that, and I won't get much into details about what's going on there. But we have been having dialogue.
And whether, you know, this is done or not in the next few days or afterwards, it's not going to affect what we're thinking about in the draft one way or the other.
And obviously it didn't. You just have to wonder. You have to wonder. They added Jahan Dotson from Penn State with the 15th overall pick. Traded down a few spots. Could have one of the Ohio State guys to go along with Terry McLaurin. Didn't get him. But how much does this regime feel compelled to keep McLaurin? They didn't draft him. They didn't develop him.
Right.
And we saw what the Titans did with A.J. Brown. This is one of the ways of dealing with the position. You backfill with a rookie. You move on from the veteran. You flip him for assets. Are they going to pay him?
Yeah.
Are they going to trade him? He still could be traded. You know, these guys that haven't gotten their contracts yet could still be traded. We're less than a month from the end of the draft. There are still deals that could be done, whether it is Terry McLaurin, whether it is Deebo Samuel, in theory, DK Metcalf, in theory. I mean, until those deals are done, there is a chance they're going to reach an impasse and just move on. And McLaurin has to be, I think, the most likely of those three to be potentially traded because what did the Washington Commanders do. They drafted a receiver in round one.
Yeah, drafted a receiver in round one. Drafted a receiver that's speedy like Terry McLaurin in round three last year, and De'Ami Brown, who I loved and shows potential, got a little injured. They got Curtis Samuel. I think the question you raise at the start here is the real thing. Where do they lie in this, you know, conversation of the wide receiver? Because I could see it going the way you're kind of talking about. Like, oh, maybe they're going to be one of those teams that's going to go, no, we're not going to pay. We're going to just have guys kind of coming up the ranks. We're going to draft a receiver every year or, you know, every other year. And just going to have people filtering up the system that way. They certainly are set up that way to a degree. Now, McLaurin's really good. He is. He's a really good football player. He is one of the best receivers in football. I don't put him in the class of A.J. Brown or Debo or D.K. Metcalf. I know some people do. I don't think he has quite the physical ability they do after the catch to break tackles and make stuff happen that way, but he's a good route runner, and he can run by you down the field and jump balls. He's pretty good for his size. I mean, there's great value to the guy. But, Mike, I think that's the question I have. That was the number one thing is, you know, like, sure, yeah, they want to keep him, but at what price? And what's he asking for? You know, is he asking for $25 million a year? I bet you he is. I would think he's asking something north of that. And that's, of course, a big commitment. And when you have three somewhat talented guys on the roster at receiver already, that might make you think whether you want to pay that guy or not.
Another big-name player who we assume is going to get a big contract to reflect his value to the team, to reward him for what he's done, and to compensate him in advance for the things he's still going to do. The guy who turned 31 yesterday, Aaron Donald. Here's Sean McVay talking about Donald's situation with the Rams. Remember, there was talk of retirement. There's been talk of a contract. Here's McVay talking about the best player on his team.
Obviously, things are voluntary right yep. now, but did just want to check in on if you guys have been in communication with Aaron.
Yes, it's his birthday today. Yeah. You guys wish him happy birthday. So talked to him this morning. So dialogue's been good. He's done a great job of communicating, you know, with my relationship with him, and gets a chance to spend, you know, time with his family right now. So I feel good about that.
Bottom line is they got to pay him. They got to pay him.
Yeah.
Stan Kroenke, you got to pay him. McVay, I don't know when McVay got paid, if he got paid, how much he got paid. He had that leverage because Amazon wanted to hire him.
Oh, he got paid.
I hope
paid.
He got and paid. Yeah, get it done then. Get it done then.
Yeah.
When the other windows open, that's when you get the deal done where you are. And Aaron Donald's window was potentially retirement. We've gotten a sense he's going to stick around, but at the end of the day, they got to pay him. And he held out multiple years before he got his contract. He had deep holdouts into the training camp preseason window before right. he got his contract, and he is woefully underpaid. Cooper Kupp is woefully underpaid. When you're going to be a great team like that, you got to start taking care of your guys. You got to find a way to do it, and I know you can't pay everyone, but you got to try, and Aaron Donald deserves a hell of a lot more than he's getting, so we'll see if they can get it worked out. But the other side of it too, I was told this back at the time when that notion emerged. Rodney Harrison mentioned it during the Super Bowl pregame show that if the Rams won, there was a chance Aaron Donald was going to walk off into the sunset. Los Angeles, a long way away from Pittsburgh, a different world from Pittsburgh. It's different planets between Pittsburgh and L.A., frankly. I was on both planets the same day twice this year. It is a different world, and it's a long way away from home, and not that he would expect to be traded to the Steelers, that the Steelers could pay him or would give up the assets to get him. But I do think, you know, the Debo Samuel reality that we were talking about at one point, that he'd like to be a little closer to home. I think Aaron Donald would, heart of hearts, like to be a little closer to home, Chris.
I don't doubt that. I don't. I just, you know, I don't know if there's – I don't think it logically is going to happen right now. That would be my, at least, you know, take on it. This is one where I kind of like – check the box to go, this is going to happen eventually. I'm not even worried about it. I mean, McVay talked to him yesterday morning, and the lines of communication, knowing that group out there and how McVay is, that I would think, yes, they're making sure and checking in on Aaron Donald whenever possible. Aaron Donald is one of those, he's played long enough in football. He knows what to do and get ready and get in shape. It's not that imperative that he's there for the first week of OTAs or anything like that. And, you know, I just feel like you're basically committing suicide if you're the Rams, if you don't pay Aaron Donald and have him on your football team. I mean, he's arguably the most famous person in the history of your organization now. I mean, right? Am I wrong to say that? He's probably passed up Eric Dickerson, you know.
Kurt Warner's going to tweet
well,
at you.
Well, Kurt Warner and Marshall Faulk certainly are in that category. Our awesome Deacon Jones back in the day. But he's in that kind of class of guy now to where you don't let that guy out of the building by any form of business at this point of his career. So I just think it's just a matter of time before they figure out.
You mean like they didn't let Eric Dickerson out of the building?
Different regime. I just think this is a little different regime than that one of the
80s. Here's the other side of it, too. I put no stock in anything Sean McVay says because he's never going to tell us the truth. He's never going to give us a real assessment of what's going on. If it's dire, he's still going to find a way to smile about it and say everything's great. This is fine. He's the gif of the this is fine where the house is burning all around him. I mean, come on. But that's fine. That's who he is. So that's not the most reliable source of information because he's going to always be overly flowery. That's my point. But they got to get him taken care of. I agree with you. They're not going to let him go, and he deserves a lot more than he's getting, and he's proven in the past that he won't show up until he gets whatever it is that he wants. Matthew Stafford not throwing at OTAs and may not do so until training camp. He had an anti-inflammatory shot in his throwing elbow for an issue that he had last season.
Yeah.
And it's easy to, again, you always get the flowery version from McVay and company. Oh, yeah, it's just an anti. Elbow is a fairly important part of the overall throwing mechanism, Christopher. I would be a little worried about Matthew Stafford and this elbow. If he can't throw at all during OTAs and he had to have a shot now, 3 months after the last game, I'd be a little concerned. Yeah. If I was a Rams fan. Right. I'm not saying there's anything dire going on, but it's not normal. It's not normal. He's not 100%, and there's something going on in there that they're worried about.
There was something going on towards the end of last – there was something going on in the middle of the season last year. You know, that was part of the – when we were all talking about Matthew Stafford being banged up, and, yes, he was dealing with a little foot and ankle issue, and it might have been ribs or shoulder. He was definitely – the other issue he was having was a little tendonitis in the throwing elbow. There was a little of an issue there. Sounds like, and I don't know this, but sounds like, yes, you took, you know, season's over, you take some time off, and then he started to throw footballs again and went, damn, this thing's kind of still sore. It didn't go away. So then you get the shot in the elbow, and that's never a great thing. It's not. I mean, an anti-inflammatory in your elbow is just, it's not. There's a lot of science that says it's actually not even that great for your ligaments or anything. But obviously they felt they had to do that. So, yeah, now he's going to rest it up. I'm with him. You know, I'll be a little bit like, oh, damn, he's still dealing with this? Like, that maybe makes me think there's a little more to it. But we'll see where it goes. And, yeah, it's going to be all, you know, rosy and everything right now. But I hear you. There's a little concern there. I would be.
So, of all the guys we talked about, the one guy who isn't participating has a legitimate physical reason, but they all have legitimate reasons in their own right. It's all voluntary. They don't have to be there. And the guys that we've discussed have contractual reasons to not be present. And once they're taken care of, they're going to be more likely to participate. Before we take a break, though, I am compelled. Let's play a little game here.
Yeah.
Indulge me. We've already gone 52 minutes. Let's go ahead and take it another minute or two. Can we put up the photo of the Styptic pencil? We're going to do a little prices right here. I got a question for Chris. The Styptic pencil, which is a horrible business model when you consider the fact that the shaving technology has gotten to the point where you rarely get cut. Like, how often do you need a Styptic pencil? This may be part of inventory from 1975 that they're selling, but I have found the Styptic pencil online. Chris, is it over or under $5 for the travel size Styptic pencil?
I'm gonna
over
go,
under $5.
I'm gonna go under. I'm gonna say it's $385.
Close. $295.
$295.
You can buy it now on Amazon. Right now, you can buy a Styptic pencil for $295.
Gosh.
And it's that. It is the Clubman
Well, I don't even. What do
travel
you,
size?
What did you do? Pencil. What if you had a cut? What do you? I don't even understand. What does it do? It just.
I've done a little more research. Styptic pencils contain aluminum compounds and are used to stop bleeding. The most common use for styptic pencils is to treat small cuts caused by shaving. When applied to the skin, they harden or coagulate the surface of a wound.
Oh, the old aluminum on the cut trick. That sounds like not good for you.
let me add this. They are not meant to be consumed. Really?
You mean aluminum? We shouldn't consume it. But put it on your skin, your open skin, and see how it works. Yes, that does sound like something that was, built a long time ago.
So you're saying Tom Brady wouldn't use a styptic pencil?
Absolutely not. Either the avocado version only.
All right. Now, a guy who probably carries a styptic pencil around in the pocket of his hoodie, because I have a feeling he cuts himself shaving from time to time and he dabs his face with the styptic pencil. Bill Belichick was asked some questions yesterday about who will be calling the plays on offense this year for the Patriots. It did not go well. We'll let you hear and see what was said when PFT Live continues right after this.
We're off.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.